rationale was, again, they're really resource constrained in terms of dedicating the staff to, you know, the awareness that's going on and having the materials up on campus. That was about all that they could dedicate. But I agree, it's a good point that a lot of behavior change, again, it takes longer for folks to be able to be aware of it and see it. And I do think, as you alluded to, that being able to have more kind of boosters throughout the course of the year, so when their students are getting it at the baseline new student orientation 2-3 months later, if they could add in some other elements, whether it be having the red flag campaign extended or other types of opportunities where students are already convened about where they can kind of further disseminate and help resonate that message, I think would absolutely be things to help improve it.
All right, well, let's move on to Heather Musa, who's going to be presenting one of the more, name really grabbed me when I looked at this, We're Pregnant, Let's Not Fight, Intimate Partner Violence Among Adolescents and Young Adults Transitioning to Parenthood. Ms. Sims is a doctoral candidate at Yale University School of Public Health.
That's all?
Yeah.
I can introduce.
You want to introduce yourself? All right.
I'm yeah. Sorry.
That is okay. I was.
Okay. Great.
So, no longer doctoral candidate.
Yeah, wonderful.
Best introduction ever.
Right. No. I'm an epidemiologist by training. I'm currently with the Center for Interdisciplinary Innovation and Inquiry for Sexual and Reproductive Health at the University of Chicago. And I'm working with colleagues Tamara Callens and others at the University of Georgia and Trace Kershaw at Yale University. So this is a project out of some data from Trace's partner study, which I'll describe further. So briefly, I guess my research is largely reproductive health, maternal child health, and so this it's certainly a relevant topic, as we all know, and that's why we're here for adolescents and adolescent partnerships. So I have no relationships to disclose. And I'll start by just saying IPV is a serious public health concern. CDC data suggests that sexual and physical IPV affects up to 1 in 3 women, or 36%, in their lifetime. And the majority of these women experience IPV prior to age 25. So this is something that is hitting the youngest of our population. And 9% of high school students report being hit, slapped, or physically hurt by a boyfriend or girlfriend in the past 12 months. So we're seeing this among this young age. So we know IPV during pregnancy is associated with several poor outcomes, including postpartum depression, prenatal depression, miscarriage, substance use, PTSD, preterm delivery, and low birth weight. So there's a whole host of ramifications among maternal outcomes, and it's also associated with child health outcomes as well, including insecure attachment, worse child development, and I guess IPV during parenthood. So IPV during pregnancy has its own ramifications, and IPV during parenthood also has consequences. So we need to identify and look at this continuum here, because both sides of this matters. We know that there's lower breastfeeding rates among depressed moms, among moms with IPV and higher depression as well. So IPV within couples may increase during pregnancy among adolescents due to increased stressors from potentially unplanned pregnancies. So this is a population in which pregnancies may be more likely to be unintended or unplanned, and the stressors from that may increase stress within that relationship. An estimated 20 to 25% of adolescents report experiencing violence during pregnancy. But we know very little about IPV among this vulnerable population, which is parenting adolescent and young adult couples. So our goal of the project was to describe the prevalence of physical and sexual violence of adolescents and young adults as they transition to parenthood, to examine differences by gender, and to identify predictors of adolescents and young adults who are victims of physical and sexual violence throughout this transition. So this data, as I mentioned before, comes from a longitudinal cohort of 296 couples. They were recruited as pregnant young women and their partners who self-reported being in a relationship with one another at baseline in pregnancy, followed from pregnancy through 1 year postpartum, so through 12 months after the baby was born. The inclusion criteria at baseline was that they had to be in their second or third trimester of pregnancy. The females were ages 14 through 21. The male partners had to be at least 14 years of age, but there was no upper age limit for the males. They had to report being in a romantic relationship with one another. Both had to report being the parents of the unborn baby, the biological parents. They both had to agree to participate and fluent in either English or Spanish. And the IPV measures we used were modified from the Sexual Experiences Survey and Conflict Tactics Scale. So physical violence was assessed with the question, have you ever been shoved, punched, hit, slapped, or physically hurt by your partner, your mother, the father and mother of your baby? Has this happened since you were pregnant? That's what they asked at baseline. They were asked at baseline. At 6 months, they asked since the baby was born, and then at 12 months, it was in the last 6 months. So these are contingent on, the time frame was contingent on that survey assessment. The sexual violence was similar. Has the father or mother of your baby ever used force, hitting, holding down, using a weapon to make you have sex, vaginal, oral, or anal with him or her? Has this happened since you've been pregnant, and so on? We looked at a host of predictors from a bunch of different levels, including the individual, let's see, age, gender, your standard employment. We looked at pregnancy wantedness, which was asked on a 5-point scale. To what extent did you want to be pregnant when you found out? Ranging from not at all to very much. We looked at the dyad, the relationship itself, the partner's age, how much the partner wanted the pregnancy, relationship satisfaction, whether or not they lived together, family characteristics, because we know family matters a whole lot among these young men and women, parental support, maternal teen birth, paternal teen birth, family functioning, and these peer and community characteristics, so whether or not they had had a friend that had experienced a teen birth, neighborhood problems, or crime index. It's a lot. I can tell you more, but I think this is just to say we looked at a lot of different levels of influence for these young men and women. We first described our sample and the frequency and prevalence of this violence. We used mixed effects binary logistic regression models. We first did unadjusted models and then included predictors that had been significant at a p-value of 0.1 and then eliminated predictors so that we ended up with significant predictors in our final model. And then we looked at moderation by gender with interaction terms using that final model. So here's a little bit about our sample briefly. These are just a few because I didn't want to go through all of it. You can see on average females a little younger than males. About 39% were currently in school at 6 months. At baseline. It's pretty racially and ethnically diverse. It's the first baby for the majority, about 3/4 of the men and women. And about half had wanted the pregnancy, kind of or definitely. And then the majority actually lived with the father or mother of the baby as well. So here's what we found. So this is the combined sexual or physical violence. So sexual violence was, there was a much lower percentage of sexual violence than physical violence, and so we put them together to be able to tell the story better with an increased N. So what we find is that overall about 20% of individuals reported being the victims of physical or sexual violence since the pregnancy started. We have females that reported, about 10% were females, and 10% of females and 30% of males reported this violence since pregnancy. At 6 months postpartum, you see the rate drop down a bit, but it's still higher among males and females. The relationship since pregnancy is statistically significant. I forgot to put the asterisk. The one at 6 months is marginally significant. So it's like 0.07, 0.08. And at 12 months, there's no difference across genders. Shown another way, we have the females look a little bit more stable. You see that the since pregnancy bars to the left, 6 months postpartum and 12 months postpartum. And male, you see that drastic kind of decline. And again, these are victims of IPV, sexual or physical IPV. So it looked like the males were experiencing more violence as victims in the pregnancy, and it decreased over time. And it was significant among males in the overall, but the overall is being driven by the males, right? Because it's both. But it's not different among females. Okay, so I also looked at this another way. I wanted to see what were the patterns of the violence among these individuals. So the vast majority have no violence at any point at pregnancy, 6 months or 12 months. So about 68% didn't report this kind of violence at all. About 12% reported no violence in pregnancy, but violence at either 6 months or 12 months. So I call that increasing violence. About 12% also reported decreasing violence. So they reported it in pregnancy, but not in the postpartum period. And then constant, so it was in pregnancy and in the postpartum period, was about 8%. So there's a significant proportion of this sample that's experiencing either increased or constant violence, which is what we really want to be able to identify. How it breaks down by gender is here. So you can see the females report, like 3/4 report no violence at all, being the victims of no violence at all, and males about only about 58%. And so we see, like reflected in the bar charts, we see the decreasing violence among males is pretty salient. And then you see, I guess the biggest percentage among females is that increasing violence piece. But we know it's not a significant difference over the course of the trajectory, that transition. Okay, so our modeling, we looked at constant or increasing violence versus no violence at all. We didn't know kind of what to make of the decreasing violence. We didn't really want to say that that was good because there was still violence and it's still not something we're aiming for. So we didn't want to group it with no violence, but it's different than this really high risk that has increasing violence or constant violence. So we looked among these categories of participants, and we found the higher odds of among participants participants were more likely to have constant or increasing violence with more years of education. So they were more likely to be the victim of violence if they had higher education, which is kind of interesting. I'd love your thoughts. Lower odds of constant or increasing violence when you had older partners, when you had greater social support, when you had greater relationship satisfaction, and greater parental support. And those estimates, I wrote a note at the bottom, those estimates are 5-point increases, not just a single unit, because it was the range is so big of the scale. So we see those as being protective against experiencing IPV. And then this is, I just wanted to show these, because I think they're really interesting. I think it's kind of a conversation generating piece. But these are looking at the interaction effects by gender. So we found a significant interaction for family functioning, and we found that there's no association between family violence and being the victim of constant or increasing violence among males. But among females, we found that greater family functioning is related to lower odds of experiencing this constant or increasing violence, which I think makes sense and I think goes along with the other effects we have found, the main effects. Household income, I thought, was interesting as well. Among males, no association. Among females, you had a little bit higher odds of experiencing constant or increasing violence with greater household income. And then pregnancy wantonness, I just wanted to show this again. The interaction was significant, but the effect was opposite, but neither was significant. So just bear with me. So we found a little bit of a protective effect among males, so that if they had wanted the pregnancy, they had lower odds of constant or increasing violence. And among females, they had higher odds if they had wanted the pregnancy, higher odds of experiencing increased or constant violence. Again, not significant, but the sample size may have precluded that. Measurement may have reduced that effect, but something to think about, I guess. Overall, we found that IPV was reported by a substantial percentage of participants. So this is an issue, and this is an issue obviously among adolescents and adolescents going through pregnancy and parenthood, early parenthood. The reports were highest during pregnancy, which is an incredibly vulnerable time for moms, which certainly warrants additional attention. And it decreased. We found lower reports at 6 months and 12 months, particularly among males. And overall, males reported higher IPV than females. So we find that they're more likely to be victims in the context of this sample in these couples than females. And I think we often see it as a female kind of victimization issue. So I just wanted to raise that. And then reports of violence among males decreased over time but remained stable among females. So we see these differential patterns and individuals with stronger support systems and greater relationship satisfaction. So that's the family functioning, that's relationship satisfaction, that's social support. They reported lower violence, being victims of less likely to be victims of this IPV. Future direction, so we need programs to address violence within relationships for these parenting adolescents and to allow them to develop and cultivate healthy relationships. These should include conflict resolution, effective communication, goal setting. And we also need family-based programs to provide support, not only to the new moms and dads, but also to their families of origin as necessary, because we found that those are kind of critical pieces to this puzzle and help protect the women and men from experiencing this, and advocacy for young pregnant women and support groups for new fathers. And references, and that's it. Great, thank you.
I did it. Oh, good.